news centre, the Florida pastor who threatened to burn copies of the Quran says he feels like he's been lied to and may yet go ahead with his protest. Terry Jones had cancelled the event, claiming he'd reached a deal on the siting of a new Islamic centre, but it now looks like there's no such agreement. Our Foreign Affairs editor Tim Marshall says there are still unanswered questions.
Will he or will he not go ahead with this, because he's now left it open? Has there been a conversation between him and the authorities of the mosque that is proposed to be built close to Ground Zero? He says yes, and they say no. One of them is lying.
Meanwhile, around 10,000 people in Afghanistan are protesting against plans to burn copies of Islam's holy book. It's reportedly the largest demonstration so far. As another police force announces job losses, there's a warning the only winner from the funding cuts will be criminals. Hampshire Constabulary's axing 1,400 posts. Following the announcement by Kent Police, it's getting rid of 1,500. Minister Nick Herbert says he understands the Police Federation's concern about government cuts, but believes savings can be made.
We're determined to protect the front line, and that means reducing bureaucracy, and it means making sure that police forces can work more efficiently, can collaborate, share services, and drive out cost.
Around 2,500 jobs have been rescued as a housing maintenance firm, Connaught, which collapsed earlier this week. Administrators have struck a deal with the construction firm Morgan Sindall to sell the social housing division. The agreement is worth £28 million. A new drug for people with type 2 diabetes could soon be widely available on the NHS. Victoza works by stimulating the release of insulin and reducing appetite. In football, England striker Jermaine Defoe is out until the end of the year. His club Tottenham say he'll miss the next 3 months after undergoing ankle surgery. And it's the end of an era in reality television tonight. Fans are getting ready to say goodbye to Big Brother. The last ever episode goes out on Channel 4 this evening. That's the latest. I'm Chloe Culpin.
Bristol Community FM.
Hello, I'm Jill Kelly and I'm the new principal of the City Academy Bristol. We're having some open days soon and I'd like to invite you to come visit our fantastic school. It's important to emphasise the proven track record of academic success we have here. Our students are achieving way beyond what is expected of them. We put that down to excellent teaching, clear expectations and outstanding facilities. The open evening is on Thursday the 23rd of September between 6:30 and 8:30. The open mornings are Wednesday the 22nd and Thursday the 23rd of September at 9:30 in the morning. You don't need to make an appointment. The City Academy Bristol is on Musseltown Avenue in Easton. www.cityacademybristol.org.
Bristol Community FM.
Hello and welcome to BCFM's Friday Drive Time. I'm Tony Gosling. My guests to review this week's news in Bristol, Britain and around the world are Conservative Councillor for Frome Vale, Leslie Alexander, and Liberal Democrat Councillor for Knowle, who's also Cabinet Lead Member on the Green the area green space plan, that's Gary Hopkins. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is here too. After the 6 o'clock news, well, it's not just Bristol Open Doors Day, it's also the 9th anniversary of the September the 11th attacks in New York and Washington tomorrow, and with a nasty so-called pastor from a tiny Florida church making headlines around the world, we look at some of the latest revelations about the attacks themselves and ask, are the mainstream media asking serious questions about these attacks, or are they still bumbling around in the dark, led by the latest sensation? Also, it's Bristol's Anarchist Book Fair tomorrow at Hamilton House on Stokes Croft, and I'm joined by one of the organisers. And mind over matter, can the placebo effect cure you? Marina Morris reports. That's in the second hour. On to our review of the week's news in a minute, but first, here's our two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. This weekend, highs about 20 degrees Celsius, wet on Saturday but sunny on Sunday. Next week, highs of 17, a little cooler, fairly cloudy at the beginning of the week with some gusty winds. Midweek should be the sunniest days with possible rain on Friday. Next weekend, that's the 19th and 18th of September, highs of 16 degrees Celsius, even cooler, sunny spells and showers next weekend. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Well, time to introduce this week's guests now, and with me are Conservative Councillor for Frome Vale, Leslie Alexander, and Liberal Democrat Councillor for Knowle, who's also Cabinet Member for Area Green Space Plan, Gary Hopkins. Well, first of all, Gary, welcome to Drive Time.
Hi.
Now, first of all, what is your background before you were a councillor?
Well, I've done all sorts of things, but I became involved in politics in Bristol protecting parks. And in actual fact, a couple of years before I became a councillor, took a park off, a playground off the council because they were maintaining it so badly, and got it all, owned by local residents, and it's still there now and it's in good shape, thank you very much.
So why did you choose the Liberal Democrat Party rather than one of the other parties?
Because I believe in the principles of liberalism, which is freedom and responsibility. And I think that, unfortunately, neither of the other parties actually represent my views. I think that the Labour Party, unfortunately, looks to featherbed people away from reality sometimes and doesn't actually help people to help themselves, which is what we're all about.
Now, tell us about this particular park that you took to your heart, so to speak, and took away from the council. Whereabouts was it?
I was in Novus Park, which is where I was living at the time, which is actually was in Filwood Ward. And basically, at that time, there were concerns about a number of play parks, and they'd been neglected, and I'm afraid it still is the case that some parks, play parks, have been neglected around the city. But it was a lot worse then, and basically what we decided to do was to get it into local ownership, because there's no point in just actually spending a lot of money doing a park up. You've also got to work out who's going to look after it. Is it going to be protected? Is it going to be vandalised afterwards? And a Parks and Green Spaces strategy looks at all those sorts of things as well, about the community involvement, about how once you've improved parks and improved play parks, how they're looked after and how they're used.
Well, isn't it a bit ironic now that you are seen as a sort of bugbearer by some people in the city as not looking after the parks and open spaces?
Well, the Parks Forum, who represent all the parks groups around the city with over 60 members, for local parks groups, the Civic Society, and Bristol in Blue, all those sorts of organisations, they've been working with the council over the last 3 to 4 years in actually developing this plan, because the Parks and Green Spaces strategy is all about improving our parks. And then and it does that partly by looking at some of the less valuable areas of land, and there's no such thing as an area of open space that has no value, but looking at some of the less valuable ones on an objective criteria, which officers were sent off to do a couple of years ago, they've come up with those, and some of those will be disposed of, and the majority of the money from those disposals will be invested in the parks.
Well, why can't we be paying for that via, as usual, the council tax?
Well, historically it's been the case that parks haven't been the highest priority for councils of various different colours, and that's basically partly because we have legal requirements to do things in education and social services, etc. We're forced to do a number of those things to certain standards, but the requirement upon councils to produce the parks to a clear standard, and it isn't always clear what the standard should actually be, has never been really part of the council's core responsibilities. But we think it should be, and we think parks are absolutely vital, and they're one of the key things that people actually value in the city.
Now, you're on the cabinet at the moment. Now, can't the cabinet, since the new rules came in a few years ago, just override decisions of the full council if it wants to?
Effectively, yes.
So, that's not very democratic, is it?
That's the system that was introduced a few years ago under the previous government. Councils weren't given much of a choice. It is possible that might in actual fact be reviewed. There are reviews of constitution being looked at, so it is possible things might change.
Well, Conservative Councillor Leslie Alexander is also here in the studio with me. Leslie, tell us about your background, what you were doing before you got into the Conservative Party and became a councillor.
Well, I've been in the Conservative Party since I was about 16, because I joined as a young Conservative, and I've been an activist ever since. But my working life was spent working for one of the big banks.
Which one?
NatWest.
And you're chair of Health and Adult Social Care Scrutiny, one of the committees on the City Council. What does that mean?
We look... Until a year ago, it was just health, and we were looking at the things that the health service wanted to do and making sure that they were consulting and doing where they needed to, and really keeping them up to scratch. About 18 months ago, adult social care was added to that, so now we have a look at what the council is doing as well as far as adult social care is concerned.
So the idea is that you get the minutes of the main committees and you go through them and say, well, hang on a minute, we need to ask some questions about this.
Well, we don't get the minutes of the main committees. There are certain things that we want to examine in detail. Budgets is one. The old people's homes, or lack of, or disposal of, I suppose, is another. We're looking at all those sorts of things, as well as things to do with the health service.
Now, that sounds a bit nerve-wracking, disposal of old people's homes. Well, what's happening on that front around the city?
Well, it's quite a big issue at the moment. The council is closing some of their homes. They're mainly going into the homes that the council retain are mainly dementia homes, and there's going to be less of those. They are using much more the very sheltered accommodation where people have their own flats, but there is nursing facilities on site, and of course they're using some of the private nursing homes.
Now Gary's had his say on the green spaces. What's your party and what's your own personal view on the area green spaces plan?
Well, the original idea was something that we thought was a reasonable idea, but we were led to believe that it was very low spaces, and of course it was not site specific at that time. So in theory, yes, it was a good idea to sell some bits of land to improve the existing parks, and the Conservatives did sign up to that at the time. But of course since then we've now got the sites, which aren't the derelict pieces of land that we were led to believe. And the first duty of a councillor is to look after its their constituents. And therefore, if the constituents aren't happy, then we must represent them on that. And they are not happy.
Well, yes, but I remember reading somewhere a few weeks ago that Bristol's got one of the highest proportions of land ownership for the council. It owns more land in Bristol than almost anywhere else in the country. So they've got to dispose of some land, haven't they?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, people aren't necessarily wanting their land improved. They just want to be able to keep it. And in some cases, it's not only disposal of land, it will reduce the value of people's homes. They bought their homes because of the pleasant outlook, and now they're being told they're going to have a block of flats or something worse put in front of them. Of course, they're not happy.
Now, we just heard from Gary that if the Cabinet wants to do this, it can do it anyway. It doesn't have to ask the full council.
No.
So, you know, what is the point of the Conservatives having this position if actually you can't really do much about it?
Well, the Liberal Party profess green credentials. They also profess to listen to the people, and the people are speaking.
OK, now we're going to have a look, first of all, Bristol on Tuesday this week, we had a full City Council meeting of 70, yes, that's 70 councillors, for the first time since the summer break. Outside, there were over 100 people on College Green and a pony called Kipper from all over the city, gathering as a peaceful protest.
I'm Elfrie Gonzalez, and this is our pony Kipper.
My name's Tim Dunton. I used to be a resident of Fish Ponds, where Kipper is housed. There's a field next door to UWE St Matthias College, and there's been grazing horses there for over 50 years. And basically the council are trying to sell off the land for housing development. It's probably the only bit of green space. He's part of the local community, has been for the last 13 years. Parents with children and stuff go down to the park, they see Kipper. So it's also about, you know, teaching responsibility with animals and stuff like that as well.
Hello. So you're living in the city. I mean, you can't surely expect to be able to have a horse in the city.
We have a horse slap bang in the middle of Fish Ponds on it. It's a lovely little 1 acre field. Horse of grazer for 50 years. We've had the field for 13. And we just recently told that the council wants to develop the site, build 216 houses. All the residents of the area are very much against this. We're bringing a petition today of in excess of 300 signatures, plus 300 online signatures. And we also have a Facebook group of over 800 members. And we want to stay on that field, really.
OK, so, but can you understand that obviously the council have got their targets and they're supposed to be building houses too?
Absolutely. And in Fish Ponds, there's a huge derelict site, which has been empty for about 25 years, which I think would be ideal for housing. The infrastructure's there, the roads are there, and it's just left derelict.
Well, the council would say that they're doing this green spaces consultation at the same time as they're looking at their housing, so I'm afraid your brownfield site doesn't come into their figures.
As I understand it, they want to sell all of the green spaces and then use 70% of the cash for the parks which are left. But the way they're going, there won't be many parks left, will there?
Once you sell off all the green spaces, you're left with like a concrete jungle. So, you know, it's like, you know, there's no area for kids to play or anything like that, or people to enjoy themselves as well. And also, the land was actually sold by Vassal, who owned the land then, and there's supposed to be covenants and stuff on the actual land as well.
That was Elfrey Gonzalez and Tim Dunton from Fish Ponds. Now, Gary, do you want to pick up on some of the points there?
Yeah, fine. I mean, for one thing, in terms of getting it into context, the percentage of the open space that's potentially being sold off, and these are recommendations from officers, they're not final decisions, is around about 2% across the city. But in actual fact, in terms of the amount of accessible open space we finish up with, it will actually increase very significantly. We're at the same time looking to take on Stoke Park, which is a massive piece of land that Conservatives actually sold off under the last government off to private developers. We reacquired.
When you say take on, you mean buying it?
Well, no, we don't have to buy it. We've come to quite a clever arrangement where we can actually take it back on from the contractors, because we've refused planning permission steadfastly over the years, and that will actually come back into public use, and it's actually going to be used for public access, and actually we're going to be grazing cattle on there as well in the middle of the city. And also in Leslie's ward, she'll recognise that we're taking, probably going to have to take on Grove Wood. We've designated a nature reserve. That's been under threat from the owner, a property developer. And that is actually, in case of Leslie's ward, it's four times the amount of any land that's likely to be disposed of in that area.
Right, I mean, the local residents are talking about fish ponds being turned into a concrete jungle.
Well, I can understand it if you live next door to a piece of land that's, you know, that's been open and there's potential development there. Then, yes, if I was living next door to it, I'd be concerned and voicing my my concerns. But what we're actually looking at is a plan right across the city, potentially about 2%, although it will finish up differently after we've got all the consultations in and listen to what everyone's got to say, potentially 2% of the open land being sold off, and a massive improvement in all of our parks across the city.
And if you're, as Gary said, if you're living right next door to one of those pieces of land, of course you don't want it to be sold off. We have Halborough Crescent, which is a big council estate. It's in Albury Court. They're planning to build on the green in front of those houses. Now, some of the houses have been bought by the residents, who were assured by the council at the time that the land would not be built on. There are other parts, pieces of land, Bracey Drive is another one, where no investigation has been done about the suitability of it being built on. And that is something that I think should have been done before they upset all the residents by wanting to, you know, wanting to build on it.
One of the biggest areas, hold for a second, Gary, one of the biggest areas which the council are looking to sell off is nearly 50 acres to developers, and that is Victory Park in Brislington, which was given to the local people as a celebration in 1918 at the end of the First World War.
I'm Lisa. I mean, we're down here for the same reason as the lady behind. I mean, in Brislington, they're going to be building on 48.8 acres of land, which we've got. Recreational land, which is a huge park, Victory Park. They're going to be building on that. We've got a horse field down there with 9 horses on there at the moment. We weren't even told. So we've not even had anybody from the council tell us that our land's being built on. But you go on all the websites, and we went to meeting last night, went to the partnership meeting last night, and yeah, it's there for building on. They're actually saying that they're going to build on one part of it and try and leave the football pitch in the middle. So they're going to do industrial one side and residential on the other, and leave the football pitch for the lads to use. I mean, it's used by scouts, beavers, all the children from the local schools. I mean, my daughter goes to the after school club. They take them down there for recreational after school club to help them. I mean, there's nothing around our area. It's all busy streets. You've got industrial estates, so you've got nothing for the children to use. But I mean, the majority of the teenagers and that, I mean, it's drug abuse on the streets, you know, because they're bored. They've got nowhere to go. And now they're talking about taking away more of green space for the children to use. It's, and obviously we're worried about the horses. We've got nowhere to take them. I've had to apply today to the council to go on the list to bid for grazing in our area. Now, if they've got no grazing, you've got to go on a list to bid for grazing. Why the hell are they building on it?
Now, council will say that they desperately need space to build new homes.
Yeah, you can understand that, but at the same time, you're going to be building houses to put families in with children. Where are those children going to play? They're taking away all their green spaces to play in. So what is the point of bringing more families in when they've got nowhere to go? What are they going to do with these children? I don't know if you've been to Brislington and Broomhill. It's gorgeous. We've got something to be really proud of. You can walk out of your busy street where you've got lorries driving past you, busy main roads, go down the back of your house and there's green space and it's like walking into the countryside. We're really, really fortunate and I'd love to keep hold of that. And the council just want to tear it all apart. You can't back down. There's no way you can give up a fight on this.
I'm Kirsty. It's not even the fact that they want to build houses on that land. It's industrial estate that they want to put on there. It's not houses. There are loads of derelict buildings that have been industrial before. They can easily redo them. I mean, there's no need to take away the green land that we've got.
What do you think is a difference it would make if they did build all over this for young people?
There's just nowhere to go. I mean, I go down there. I'm 17 years of age. I've been going down there since I was little because of the horses and like the green space is just a lovely place to be. You can go down there. We've got bats down there. We've got foxes and their cubs, badgers. It's just lovely to see all the wildlife. There's other places like St. Philip's they can build on where they've got space as well. They don't need to take all of our green land. And at the moment, they're building enough around Broomhill as it is. They've taken down the prefabs where there is a lot of history for our family. They've taken those down, building on that. There were allotments down there. They've taken them and built on that. I just think they're building too much already, to be fair.
That was Lisa and Kirsty there from Victory Park in Brislington. Now, Gary, the children have going to have nowhere to go.
Well, actually, that's not true, because Victory Park is due for a significant amount of improvement. Some of the land round about it is designed. Now, I don't know that site, that individual site, in a lot of detail, but I have had a glance at that. And
it is a very big site, isn't it? 50 acres.
It is, yeah. But, I mean, the whole point of this is that officers were sent away 2 years ago. They've been involved in a huge, huge process here. And I was amused with Leslie's comments earlier on. Oh, well, we thought it was going to be different, you know, 2 years ago. Officers were given instructions then. It was very clear how much land might be actually required. That was all written up in a strategy, exactly how much there might actually be. And to have officers go away for 2 years, do the job that they were told to do, and now come back, and now we're going through the consultation based on their work, it's no point now saying, oh, we're against the strategy that we voted for previously.
We didn't say we were necessarily against the strategy, and yes, 2 years ago, it was put to us in a rather different way than it is now being put. We appreciate that there wasn't a huge amount of land in comparison with the whole that the council owns, but it's totally different land.
So what was the difference in what you're saying that was said 2 years ago?
Well, we were told it was bits of unproductive land, but that's not the case. We're getting really nice pieces of land that people and spaces that people value. A lot of the open spaces people are quite happy to let their children play on because they can see them from their homes, and they're not going to be able to do that. And we've also got instances where the council isn't, one department isn't talking to another. For instance, Begbrook Green in my ward, they want to put some gypsy sites there. It's the only place that Begbrook School could expand onto, and all of the schools in East Bristol, the primary schools, are under pressure to expand. And not only are they under pressure to expand, but all but one site, which isn't Begbrook, are under pressure space-wise. So again, you've not got education talking to parks.
Well, I'm not involved in what actually happens to those sites afterwards. That's a planning matter rather than around the parks and green spaces matter. But I do know that departments have been speaking to each other, and I do know that the parks officers have actually been leading this process. They're not property developers. They're the officers who care about Bristol's parks. And what they've looked at are the sites that they think are less valuable. Whole list of criteria. I mean, the lady mentioned wildlife there. That's one of the top of the list. If it has important significance for wildlife, then that actually makes it significantly less likely that officers would consider it for disposal. Now, that doesn't mean to say that that in some areas there won't be some loss. There's bound to be when you're actually looking at a strategy as large as this. But the officers have done what they were told to do 2 years ago, and now we've got a consultation.
What about the whole business, the legal aspect, really, of land that's been gifted to the council in the past with covenants on it saying this is for the use of the people that you're now considering selling off?
Well, I'm afraid every time there's a development, that one always comes up. In most cases, they turn out to be non-existent or non-enforceable, but it happens practically every time.
But sometimes they are there. But those open spaces were put there for a reason, and usually it was because they were needed as open spaces for people whose homes backed onto them, because most gardens aren't suitable for football and various other things. People need larger spaces, and they need those spaces near their homes, especially if they're older or if they're children.
What about this argument, Gary, about St Philip's? Because, I mean, St Philip's is a lot of sort of brownfield development,
I mean, that's as intensively developed as, and it will be more intensively developed.
And there's quite a lot of empty industrial land there.
Not a huge amount, to be quite honest, and basically all of that is targeted for investment and for more industrial use. And there are other parts around the city where there is going to be quite potential intensive development. I mean, basically, Knowle West is an area that's been looked at for a very, very large regeneration scheme.
But ignoring St Philip's for a minute, up at Victory Park, there's some empty industrial land and empty industrial units right next to Victory Park that's apparently been, some of the local residents up there were saying, has been empty for years.
Well, I think you'll probably find in every part of the country at the moment there are some empty industrial units. That doesn't mean to say that when the recession abates, that there will still
but this
be empty.
These are units that were even empty before the recession.
Bristol is, outside London, the most successful city in the UK in terms of attracting business and investment. And basically, it also that with that goes a need for more houses, more industrial units, etc. And basically, you know, that's a factor. Now, the prime factor in the Parks and Green Spaces strategy is investments in a park. But having land available also is a secondary factor in terms of for people needing somewhere to live, somewhere for jobs.
Now, it does seem the council planners had a thorough look at all the small pockets of green from around the city, even those greens which were designed into estates when they were first built.
My name is Bernice Morgan, and I've been at Long Close since 1985. One of the very first to buy their houses there. It was a tarmac development, and the green that had to be left there because they were taking so much green away at that time. The trees that are there are to replace the trees that were taken down for the development. Children from Aubrey Court School use it. It's a green that's used by all the community, for those that are children and for those that are old. It's a meeting place, it's a place for those who have got dogs to exercise, and it's also a point of focus.
Yeah, but the houses need to be built somewhere, don't they? And isn't this really just a NIMBY argument you're using?
No, I don't think it is, not in just our backyard. If you go along into fish ponds, into many other places, there are houses that are not being used. Industrial land and houses. There are houses around that are blocked up. That need to be used before you take the green space. They've got to remember that in order for them to be in the council, they have to be voted in, and we are part of the voters. So things can change. Their jobs were also at stake.
That was Brynius Morgan there from Long Close. Now, Gary, what about that? The ultimate sanction there is that you may find yourself not elected if you go through with this.
I don't think that's the case, because the people who've been working with the Parks, the Parks Forum, they actually approve of this process. It was developed in conjunction with that. Naturally, there will be groups who are concerned about their local patch of grass. I mean, it wouldn't be my description of it, but the Conservative chair of the Scrutiny Commission that looked at this before the Labour Party actually passed this plan, actually described lots of areas as green desert. Now, I mean, that's a pretty pejorative term, but it actually is the extreme of where we are. In some areas, you have, in some parts of the city, have large areas of open space, but of rather poor quality. And in a lot of those areas, we're actually looking at some small disposals, but then investment back into those areas so that the quality actually improves. And in some of them, you know, we've got a vast undersupply of places for children to play. We hear about, you know, they want somewhere to play, but play parks need to be improved.
You're going to have even less places if you move all these green spaces. Just going on to the back to the Parks Forum, you keep saying that it was developed, but I have to say that as a member of the Parks Forum, they were very reluctant to lose any space, and it was only very reluctantly that they agreed to this this strategy. And I have to say, there's a way, there's a lot of difference between the theory of anything and the actual. And I have to emphasise that when that it wasn't, when we agreed it 2 years ago, it was not site specific. And of course, we're going to oppose it if the local residents are unhappy.
So ultimately, really, the Parks Forum, if you know, if what you're saying is true, really should have opposed this, Leslie.
Well, they weren't happy with the whole setup, but they reluctantly agreed to it. But they and the Conservatives and all of the other parties did so not knowing what the specific sites were, because they had been identified at that time.
But why did you agree to it when you didn't actually know which sites?
Well, no, we agreed to the theory of the counts of the officers going to look. We did not agree to any specific sites.
Well, okay. We're in a position now where we have a list of recommendations from officers. That's not the final list, as it will finish up. But, I mean, this isn't a matter that the Parks Forum got conned into this 2 years ago and they changed their minds now. They were along on Tuesday lobbying us to stick with the strategy. They're absolutely adamant that they're fully in support of this strategy.
I have to say that the Parks Forum represents various parks which are not losing any of their land. So, of course, they're going to be in favour of the outcome, but the poor people that are going to lose land are very much against.
Now, the council meeting itself, this is this week, began at 6 o'clock on Tuesday, and the public gallery was filled to capacity with at least 100 people from around the city, as well as a live video link so more could watch from the big hall next door. On the agenda was this area green spaces plan, and petitions or submissions had been invited from around the city. There were so many statements from the public that it looked like there may not be enough time to hear them all.
Speaking on behalf of the residents and all the stock registry of service and terms of the green space officers, I thought the idea is to go green, not backwards. That's it. You should need cars and more fumes. Noise. What about the parking? I hope I got gas orders for a wonderful outlet of nature. Please keep stock of green for future generations. Somewhere to relax and be at peace. I don't know anybody who wants to see this bill come. Finally, please, please, see sense and keep it green. I beg you, please, Ted Watts and everywhere residents. Once again, please see sense.
There are a number of statements still left. We have 10 minutes. At the end of 10 minutes, unless I'm otherwise advised, this will be the end of this item.
No, Mayor, can I move an extension?
Done by another 15 minutes, please, so the statements can be heard. It's a very important issue.
I'll second that, Mayor. The proposal is to extend the time to public forum from 25 to 7 till 10 to 7. Those in favour say aye.
Aye.
Those who are opposed say no.
The ayes have it.
Well, that was Conservative Councillor John Galandris there getting an extension of time in the council chamber on Tuesday evening so that all the submissions from the public could be heard. What about this argument, Gary, that this is not really going green and that actually Bristol is losing its green credentials because of this?
Well, one of the reasons we wanted as a party to make certain all public statements were heard was a clear statement from the Parks Forum, which was actually applauded by people from the public gallery because they have the balanced view of the situation. It's not just parks groups, although there's lots of parks groups from all around the city, and they have representative groups from every neighbourhood partnership around the city.
Now, did you get the impression on Tuesday that maybe you've started a bit of a middle-class peasants' revolt here?
Well, as Leslie said, I mean, you're actually in a position where if it's next to you, you're concerned about that, and that's your highest priority. That doesn't mean to say, I mean, I have a responsibility to look at the thing across the whole of the city, and I have to make certain there's money there to invest in the parks and that they're improved and that people get the best access.
Leslie, do you think there are other ways that the council could be getting this money?
Yes, there are. And one of them is the 106 money. In fact, most of the money is going to come from Section 106.
Can you explain what that is? Yeah.
Yes, it's money that is obtained from developers, providing the planning application is right in every other way, to mitigate any loss in green space or any, it could be other reasons, but mainly it's for parks, to mitigate anything that their development might cause. So most of the money is coming from that source. It's not coming from the sale of the land, and only 70% of the sale of the land is going back into parks.
Well, in actual fact, 106 is a useful part of this process, but by itself it doesn't actually do the job. That's an important element of it, but the budget for the parks strategy over the next 20 years, and it is a 20-year strategy, is basically some from land sales, some from 106, some from the existing funding from the council, which in the past has not been adequate, and some from grants.
But why not sale of industrial land, derelict industrial land, rather than this green space, which is so valuable to the community?
Well, that is continuing in any case. I mean, what we're actually looking at, and unfortunately the council doesn't own an awful lot of that. I mean, we actually, as a council, have a lot of green space, huge amount of green space, as you said earlier on, more than practically any other council in the country, which is good. But I mean, our parks groups have actually said, look, you know, you're doing a good job. It's much better than it was before because our parks have improved over the last few years, but not as quickly as they need to. And we still have some parks which are very badly neglected. I mean, I could illustrate the point from my own area, my own ward. I mean, on the edge of it, 8 years ago, we had a huge piece of land sold, which was a valuable wildlife site.
This is in Knoll, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Technically, it's in Brisnington, but all the people who overlook it are from Knoll. And basically, we were very angry about that, partly because there wasn't a Parks and Green Spaces strategy, which might well have protected it, because part of the strategy says that, you know, what's going to be protected is protected. You can't have any backdoor sales going on, which is an important factor for the next 20 years. But not only was that piece of land not protected, but when it was sold for several million pounds, the money didn't come back into the parks. It just disappeared. I've got another park in the centre of my ward, Redcatch Park, which is well loved, has a friends group, all sorts of uses, but basically the pavilion is a terrible state, the toilets need replacing, we need a new cafe and that sort of thing. That needs money. We don't have it. And I've got a third area, which illustrates the third point, which is now not used by hardly anybody, because it's a big patch of grass. And the officer's suggestion is that one third of it actually be sold off and money be invested in the other two thirds to make it into a proper park.
Can I say that perhaps you ought to be looking, there's a lot of money in the Section 106 pot which is not being spent. Some of it to such an extent that when the developers handed over, some of the clauses in the past have stated that it's got to be spent within a certain period, like 2 years, 3 years, and we've actually had to give it back because it hasn't been spent.
Is that true, Gary? That's a bit naughty, isn't it?
So it ought to be used.
There were a few cases in the past. That's not happening now. But what we actually do have is a very good policy in Bristol with regard to 106, and the parks do very well out of 106 compared to a lot of other cities. But I repeat again, 106 money by itself will not be enough to put the investment into the parks, to make certain there's a proper fund there to look after them, and to make certain that they're properly staffed and properly looked after. People say, we love our parks, but we need more help and assistance for them. And the 106 by itself, to pretend that will do it, is just nonsense.
But it's still quite a small portion of money that is coming from the sale of this land, and people would prefer the bits of green that they've got near their homes rather than to have a tip-top park. Yes, they want nice parks, and they do want some money spending on them, but not to sacrifice their green spaces to do that.
Well, Bristol has a government target apparently to build 30,000 houses,
and we've already built, or we've over half. They've either been built or they've got planning permission, which means that the sites have been identified. So we have 30,000 to two. That we're supposed to build by 2025, and we've we've already allocated about 18,000. So I don't think we've got a problem.
But with the new government, it looks like those may be out of the window, those targets, and the pressure on councils to allocate land for housing with it. Paul Johnson's one of the Victory Park residents up in Brislington, and he's also a campaigner with them. And he just happens to be a professional town planner whose job it is advising local authorities on planning law.
Now the new government's come in, the planning system is really in sort of a bit of turmoil. They've moved the goalposts and currently they haven't even put up a pair of goalposts. So no one knows what the target is. And local people are supposed to, you know, in the new world of localism, is supposed to have a lot more involvement in determining this target. And Bristol has an opportunity now to do that. And instead it's pushing ahead with the 30,000. And it's quite insulting to residents, really, to say, oh, well, we want to hear what you have to say. But behind closed doors, there's a planning inspector is, you know, judging their plan. And if it's found sound, Bristol will be committed to 30,000. And the people of Brislington will probably have to see a lot of the sites go for housing, even if they strongly object with good, valid reasons.
Now, Gary, you know, you have this Lib Dem coalition at the moment, and we hear all about... But there is this whole thing of the big society. This is flying in the face of that, isn't it? The idea that local people should be making these decisions is out of the window now.
Absolutely. The situation is that I think we both agreed that the Greenbelt, which there was pressure on from the previous government for us to build on the Greenbelt, we've completely and absolutely said, no, there's not going to be any housing spread out onto the Greenbelt. But Bristol is a very successful city. There are homeless people in Bristol. Now, we are taking actions in terms of empty homes and that sort of thing to bring them back into use. But even if we brought everyone back into use, that wouldn't actually bridge the gap. But I hasten to add that the need for housing is not the primary driver behind this. The primary driver is parks improvements.
Okay. Now, this 30,000 homes, is that still Bristol's target, Gary?
We are looking round about that figure, but we don't have a centrally imposed target. And basically, we do.
So this is voluntary, really. It's a voluntary target.
It was what the government wanted us to do, and then they upped it to 38,000. There was a problem then because they upped the targets for every council around the country, and there were some legal challenges. So they never actually firmly gave us a firm target. But 30,000 is more or less what the city thinks it needs.
And what do you think, Leslie, about this? I mean, this is, you know, we're here from Westminster anyway, the big society. It's down to local people to choose, and now we're being told, I'm sorry, you know, you can take part in our consultation and answer a few questions, but maybe you're going to lose your parks.
Exactly. The big society wants people to say what they want locally, and people are saying what they want locally through this consultation. Are they going to be listened to?
Are they, Gary?
Everyone's being listened to. The point is, though, that there's lots more people to actually listen to. There's those who want their parks improved. But there are also people who don't actually have a home. They have a right as well. And basically, we've got to take their views into account. And they are at least as important as those who are already in quite, you know, a nicer situation.
Well, it's just about 18 minutes to 6 o'clock, and it's time to take a break anyway from our news review and hear our guest Leslie Alexander's choice of music. Now, Leslie, we can just hear the music in the background there. What did you choose? Why did you choose this song?
Well, Elgar, I do like his music, and he's one of the few British composers, which is one of the reasons for choosing. And Nimrod, I think, is absolutely beautiful.
And we'll be hearing Martin Summer's take on this Green Spaces plan after the music. Well, there we are, Gary. If that doesn't melt your heart, I don't know what will. The pastoral sounds of Elgar and the Enigma Variations. And welcome back to Friday Drive Time. Now, I've brought Martin Summers into the studio now, also to talk about the area green spaces plan from his economics point of view. Martin, the council has to balance the books, don't they? So this is just simply one of the ways that they can raise money, and we just have to simply grin and bear it, don't we?
Well, that's the kind of Hobson's choice we're given by the situation that we're in. I mean, one of the things I'd pick up from what most of the contributors, you know, the public and the protesters were saying is we've got these derelict brownfield sites. I mean, you were picking up on this as well. Why can't we do anything about that? And as Gary pointed out, well, that's because the council doesn't own those. Now, this is what people find hard to understand, is because the way in which things are structured in this country and has been for many generations is that the property owner is the property owner. And so things like the monstrosity in Stokes Croft of that wretched old multi-storey car park,
there is
no power by the council to do something about that. And that, of course, is what people don't realise. I mean, having worked in the council, I'm aware that the planning department often have no powers to deal with these kind of issues, and they need to have stronger powers if they're going to be able to say, no, we're not going to build on a green space, what we're going to do is compulsorily purchase that at a rock bottom price, and we're going to put social housing on.
Gary, can I ask you just to explain roughly what the council's powers of compulsory purchase are?
Well, they are, as Martin said, quite limited. We can sometimes do that, and we have managed occasionally to go through with compulsory purchase on occasion on buildings. But on that particular site he's referring to, we were partway through a compulsory purchase, and then the property owner suddenly came up with some plan, which I don't think, to put it politely, I don't think our planners were very impressed with. But it actually halted the process of compulsory purchase that we were going through on. And we would love more powers from central government. Unfortunately, the previous government spent all its time taking powers away from councils, and we hope that the new government will give us rather more.
But Martin, you're always talking about public works to get the economy going. This house building will be private works. So what's the difference?
That's another point I was going to make, is that if we just build houses for sale in the private sector, we're not necessarily going to deal with the homelessness problem. What we ultimately, I think, need to do is to have a boost in social housing, perhaps council housing, why not, on brownfield sites which are compulsorily purchased. And I notice I haven't voted for Ed Balding in our leadership election, but he has come out saying that's what we need to do. Now, of course, we don't just need to do that in terms of getting rid of homelessness, it's talking about a general direction for the economy of investment rather than cuts. And of course that's another issue, a bigger issue. But I think a lot of the time we're arguing about small things because we can't see the bigger picture, which is that we're going in the wrong direction. That's why resources are not being put in the right things.
So what would you be doing if you were in Gary's shoes then?
Well, I thought it was a very interesting debate between Gary and Leslie, because it's actually everybody agrees that we've got to manage within the constraints that we've got. I'm just saying those constraints shouldn't exist, but it's easy for me to say. I'm not even a councillor, never mind an MP. So, you know, that would be nice, wouldn't it? In actual reality, we've got to make the best of the situation we've got. And I think that, obviously, the main point is that everybody should get involved in this and make their views heard. Everybody can't get what they want in democracy. That's not the way it works. But you've certainly got the right to have your views heard. And this is the kind of thing that makes people think the democracy matters. So it's important that they get a result out of this and feel they've been listened to.
Now, Gary, I think one of the things that's worrying people right across the city is that they feel that this whole process is being driven by these voracious developers that just want cheap green land to build houses on to make more money than if they were to buy it commercially.
Well, it isn't actually that way. I mean, the officers that have actually been driving this process are parks officers. That's what they care about. Those are the people who've been making the recommendations. They're not decisions, because they put a list of options in front of us, firstly for improvements and secondly for some disposals. And for each area, there's a list of both. And what we're anxious to do is to make sure that as many people as possible get involved in the process, but not just about we don't want the piece of grass next to us sold off, but also to look at all the potential improvements that are there and to comment on those as well in a lot of detail.
Now, one of the things that's really annoying people is that a lot of people have just found out by word of mouth about this. I mean, when there's, say, for example, a gay pride march, there's notices go up for around the area where that was going to happen in Castle Park, whereas in this case, with this consultation, people have got no indication other than word of mouth, even though they may live right next to a place which is being sold off.
Well, that's not actually true. Officers spent somewhere over 2 years actually going around and looking at every green space in the city.
But no one's had stuff through the door, have they, for example?
Yes, they have, yeah.
This is what people have been telling me, is that they only found about by word of mouth.
As someone who puts probably more pieces of paper through people's doors than anyone else in Bristol, I've got to tell you that very often people say, well, I haven't had anything, and you know that you've delivered the leaflet yourself. Now, there's been quite a lot of work on that with parks officers. Hundreds, literally hundreds of public meetings they've actually taken part in, and they've stirred up as much as they possibly could, and we want to do more of that, but we're still in a process of consultation. And I mean, I think that you're probably realising that people are interested in the subject, and quite a lot of people are making comment, and that's good.
Yes, there have been an awful lot of complaints. People say that they haven't been consulted, and a lot of them seem to think that the council ought to write to them all individually, which I accept is not something that can happen. I put a leaflet out in my ward which told everybody about it. That relies on them reading it. But I have to say that the ward next to mine, and I'm sorry, Gary, it was Liberal, when they put their leaflet out, it didn't have a single word about this consultation on it. And I don't think that's something that... I think a councillor has a duty to bring these things to the attention of the constituents.
I've also heard, Gary, that some of the Lib Dem councillors in some parts of the city are also putting out leaflets which are against this policy.
No, that's not the case. Councillors from all three parties, we would hope, would raise the issues in their area. Most of them actually are. It depends on the area, what the proposals are, whether they're more or less popular. I mean, and that will actually vary. I've actually been to meetings in several parts of the city, and certainly we had I'll give the example of Locklees. We actually had people there who'd been desperately wound up by the local MP telling them that all their green space is actually going to be sold off, it's going to be disastrous, they're only taking this bit now, but it's going to be more later. When I had a meeting there with the local councillors and probably about 150 people locally, and actually explained the situation, what the reality was, it was very much calmer. Now, it depends what language you actually use, and I'm very glad that Leslie's actually accepted that, 2 years ago when the plans were being brought out, the Conservative group, as did all councillors, actually supported the principle. Others are trying to pretend that wasn't the case. But we actually have to give a balanced view of things, and it's fine to actually encourage people to get involved and alert them. That's great, as long as it's done in a responsible manner.
So who's ultimately going to decide on this? Once all the consultation papers are in from around the city, are you going to sit down with some of the planners and say, right, we're going to keep this bit of land, we're going to sell that, we're going to keep this?
Well, it's parks officers rather than planners, because that's a separate process. But not just with them. We're actually going to make certain we go out to the areas where there's been controversy and actually look at what's actually happening. We're going to be speaking to all the parks users in those areas, see what they've got to say. We're going to sit down and speak to the Parks Forum, because they're the most representative group of people who are interested in parks and wild spaces. And it's not just formal parks, it's wildlife havens, it's nature reserves, right across the city.
I would take issue about the Parks Forum. Yes, they're a very good body and they do some wonderful work, but they're not necessarily representative of the people. They have an interest in their parks, but there's an awful lot of people that use those parks that have a much greater interest in them, and they have not been consulted.
And Gary, for somebody who's coming across this for the first time potentially and wants to know if there is a piece of green space near them that you're proposing to sell off, what should they do?
I'm not. And throughout this whole process, I've been very careful to steer away from what the officers are doing, apart from one individual case where it became obvious to me that the piece of land that they were earmarking for potential sale was unsaleable because it was contaminated. So in that particular case, I stepped in and said, look, this is silly, take it off the list. But apart from that one particular case, I've steered clear of this because I wanted to be officers who've led this and followed the instructions from 2 years ago. So, no, they're not my plans, but we support the overall strategy.
So how do people find out if there's a place near them that may be sold off?
Right, basically by going to the council website and trawling through that, but also going to their library.
Well, in every library
they will find copies of the plans.
We've got the web address here, which is www.bristol.gov.uk/AGSP for Area Green Spaces Plan. But what if people don't have the internet?
They go to their library.
Yes, but people have got to know that there is a consultation happening. They don't just sort of, they've got lives to lead. They don't suddenly think, oh, let's see if there's something that we can protest about on the council's website.
Well, I will say there is actually a phone number too, thankfully, which is 0117 922 3719. That's 0117 922 3719.
Can I say, if that is requesting for people to ring to request a form, it rings about four times and then nothing happens. It's not on the, it's not part of the council's call centre, and it ought to be.
Gary, we've also got a whole list of consultation, particular individual meetings happening around the city.
Yep.
Coming up over the next couple of weeks. Bishopston, Cottam and Redland, Monday the 13th of September, Redland Parish Church Hall, Avonmouth and King's Weston on Wednesday the 15th of September. Then we've got Henleys, Stoke Bishop and Westbury-on-Trim on Monday the 20th of September, Ashley Easton and Lawrence Hill on Wednesday the 22nd of September, Henbury and South Mead Monday the 27th of September, Bedminster and Southville on Wednesday the 29th of September, and finally St George East and West, which includes Speedwell, on Monday the 4th of October. So if you want to find out any more about this, go to bristol.gov.uk/AGSP or simply call the council's number 0117 922 3719, and we hope faithfully that it doesn't just ring four times and then the line goes dead, as Leslie was just saying there. Would you like to just sum up, explain how this process now operates, Gary?
Yeah, it's been so far about 2.5 years of officers going out there and drawing up their list of recommendations from the overall strategy and then bringing it down to the local areas. Over the next 6 weeks, we look to get more as many more responses in as we can and to see what people have actually got to say. And then after that process, we'll consider that with interested parties and look at what actually we then will come up with the final result in terms of disposal, which will happen. The decision on that will be taken towards the end of December. After that, for the next few months in the new year, the local neighbourhood partnerships will be deciding what they think are their priorities for the investments.
And Leslie, what's your party going to be doing as part of this process?
Well, that depends on the bits of land. I mean, we don't have a say in making the decision, but we do have constituents who will be very worried about it. And so, yes, we will continue to press them to submit their comments to the council and continue to make press releases if we're not happy with the results.
And do you think this is something which is going to play out over the next year as these sites maybe possibly start to get sold off politically?
Oh, I'm sure they will. People will still continue to protest.
I think it's unlikely, by the way, that there will be any significant disposals in the near future. I mean, it's not the best time to be selling pieces of land. So, I mean, this is a 20-year process, and basically there is some money that's already been put aside in a pot, so we can start on the improvements before, I think, any disposals will take place.
Well, thanks very much to this week's guests, Conservative Councillor for Froom Vale, Leslie Alexander, and Lib Dem Councillor for Knoll, who's also Cabinet Lead Member on this Area Green Space Plan, Gary Hopkins. After the news, well, it's not just Bristol Open Doors Day tomorrow, it's also the 9th anniversary of the September the 11th attacks in New York and Washington. So we ask, are the mainstream media asking any serious questions about the attacks yet, or are they still being led by the latest sensation? Also, it's Bristol's annual Anarchist Book Fair all day tomorrow at Hamilton House on Stokes Croft. I'm joined by one of the organisers. Please join us after the news, which is coming up very soon. It's now just coming up to 6 o'clock.
You are listening on BCFM 93.2 FM. It is your voice and it is your choice.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.